Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Mary Jo Foley and Ed Bott, episode 158, recorded May 27th, 2010. Bringing sexy back to enterprise. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Go to Assist Express. If you're in tech support, clients rely on you for fast and reliable service. Help them the fast and easy way with Go to Assist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit gotoassist.com/windows. And by Drobo, the original S Pro, Drobo FS, and new Drobo Elite, offering expandable storage products for individuals, small businesses, and creative teams. For more information and instant rebates, visit drobo.com/windows. And by the new Carbonite Pro. It's simple, secure, and affordable online backup for your small business. For a free trial and to learn more, visit carbonitepro.com. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers all the workings of Redmond and the great companies up there, mostly Microsoft, joining us right now. Actually, I should say, Paul Thurrott is in Portugal, and we're giving him a much-needed rest. It's kind of the coffee cure. But fortunately, we have an excellent crew here to take his place. It took two to do it, starting with Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog, author of Microsoft 2.0 from Wiley & Sons. She's upside down today.
I am.
Literally.
Sorry.
There is a driver problem with her Asus laptop. You know, the first thing I asked, because Dane said, Mary Jo's upside down. And I said, well, can she turn her camera right side up? And I guess you could flip your laptop over, but let's just leave it the way it is. I think it's kind of funny. I should make your lower third upside down, though, to really make it work. Hi, Mary Jo. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
And the chat room is amazed at how your bangs stay put. Even though you're upside down.
Yeah. It's hairspray. The miracle of hairspray.
Also,
you'll need them as a sponsor.
Hey, that's Ed Bott's voice. I recognize Ed. Ed is an old friend who continues to write for ZDNet, as does Mary Jo. Good to see you again.
It's good to see you, Leo.
And you've written many a book. Former editor of, don't tell me, PC Computing, right?
That's the one.
I knew it. The late lamented PC Computing. He writes Ed Bott's Microsoft Report on ZDNet.com. And it's great to have you both here today.
Filling in to be here.
For Paul. Thank you for doing it. I almost have to start with Mary Jo's scooplet from today or yesterday that perhaps Steve Ballmer will be at the Apple Developers Conference.
Well, wait. Before you give me any credit or discredit for that. That wasn't my story.
Okay. Yeah, because I find it a little far-fetched. What was the premise? Why in heaven's name? The last time Bill Gates showed up was when Steve Jobs had just come back to Apple in 97, I think, and pledged $150 million in continued support of Microsoft Office for Apple. Fast forward 13 years. 14.
Well, the premise is that based on one Wall Street analyst's view or rumors or tips or whatever, Steve Ballmer is going to be on stage with Steve Jobs for 7.5 minutes or something like that. And he's going to say something about developing for the iPhone and the iPad, supposedly. That's the premise, the very shaky premise that this whole thing is built on.
Any word from Microsoft on this?
No.
They haven't stopped laughing. I don't. their hands are shaking until they stop laughing and can actually compose a reply. It's awfully far-fetched.
It seems a little far-fetched, yeah. I mean,
I'm going to beg to differ. I don't think it's far-fetched.
But Apple won't let it flash on the iPhone. Why would they let Silverlight on the iPhone?
Well, okay, think about this. If you hate Adobe and you hate Google, who's the other partner to bring in as your ally? Microsoft.
Interesting. It's kind of an axis.
Right. So maybe, or maybe Silverlight is just the development environment going forward for iPhone, iPad. Like, give them another option. Get the antitrust officials off of Apple's back. Because you can say, hey, look, we're open. We're so open. We're even working with the evil empire.
Yeah, that would be interesting. So Microsoft has tweeted on this matter. This is the Microsoft tweet. Steve Ballmer not speaking at App Dev Conference, nor appearing on Dancing with the Stars, nor riding in the Belmont. Just FYI. I'm gonna treat that as conclusive denial. This is not a denial. This is not a no comment. This is like, are you nuts?
So this was originally a bank shot. This was, I think, a blogger at Barron's quoting an analyst, and he specifically said that it was an analyst from a small firm, you know, just kind of code. And I think it was just a Hail Mary on this guy's part.
Trying to be a big firm.
Know, so it's just a, but no, look, an Apple keynote is a highly scripted thing where the tone is measured and the pace is it builds in such a perfect way that, in fact, at 42 minutes after the hour, that's right. When they unveil the product.
We know that because the iPhones are all set to 9:42.
That's absolutely dead serious. And so, Steve Ballmer is not someone who can control his energy level.
Yeah.
To the amount required for an Apple keynote. You know,
he can't sit backstage with a bottle of water. He's going to come running out.
Come bursting out there. No, that's, I think this one got more than its 15 minutes.
All right, we're done. I couldn't resist. It was just such a funny story. And I just,
absolutely. That's,
there is a more serious story here, which is Microsoft is sitting kind of a little bit waiting on the wings here while Apple has its big conference, announces the iPhone. Google had its Google I.O. last week. You know, Microsoft had a bunch of conferences. They had Mix and they had
PDC last fall.
So they've been in the news, but now they're sitting back. Windows Phone 7 doesn't come out till the fall. Google's talking about Android. Apple will be talking about its iPhone. In fact, one Apple blogger, John Gruber, in his Daring Fireball blog, said it's an Apple and Google world now, and Microsoft is just an also ran. Do you think that you guys are closely follow Microsoft? Do you think there's any feeling of that in Redmond?
Well, on the phone side, I'd say they're fairly worried. I mean, they're excited about what they've got with Windows Phone 7, but they know they're the complete and total underdog, and they have a ton of catching up to do. And they're also going in with a platform that is brand new, has no apps for it yet, because Windows Mobile 6 apps don't work on Windows Phone 7. So
that's tough.
Worried, I'd say.
Because it's an app world now, isn't it? You know, everybody wants to know how many apps you have.
Right.
Does that matter?
Apple did a pretty good job of defining that as the playing field. But, you know, what I thought was interesting about Gruber's post, it was typically well argued and well written, but Android didn't exist 18 months ago, and yet now
they're at least
parity with Apple. So that's how quickly things can change here. Smartphones are disposable products. The technology changes in them in a year or two. Apple has set those rules, basically. So yes, Microsoft has a tremendous amount of catching up to do, but they can, you know, they can get up and be on the track very quickly in the fall. And so, you know, a year from now, we could be saying, wow, it's a three-horse race all of a sudden. Or we could be saying, wow, look, you know, nobody's buying Androids anymore because the phone companies don't want to support them and they're not getting a subsidy for them. You know, so who knows?
Microsoft's no stranger to this in the consumer space, because it reminds me of the game consoles where Sony was on top, then Microsoft was on top, and then the dark horse Nintendo comes along, and it's a really three-horse race, and it's a tough one.
Yeah.
And that's just the consumer space, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, but in the context of mobile devices and phones, you're talking about things that only a handful of technical buyers are buying on the on the basis of specs and such. Most the large untapped markets that are out there for these things are buying them on the basis of price and contract and who their carrier is. I mean, in the United States, Apple has less than 10% share, largely because they're with AT&T. Right,
much hated carrier.
A much hated company. I've got here's an iPhone and a Windows mobile phone here, an old school Windows mobile phone, side by side. In my office right here, this iPhone will not get a signal at all. I can get typically 1 or 1.5 bars on this HTC phone. So you've got issues with the hardware. You've got issues with
the same carrier.
It's AT&T,
wow,
which doesn't have 3G service where I live even. A lot of people have to make their decisions about mobile devices on the basis of external factors.
It was also, in business where Windows Mobile is still very strong, along with BlackBerry, RIM, it's also about support for Exchange and security, right? Now Android made some announcements last week, and I don't cover the enterprise space, so... maybe you guys understand better. Were they sufficient? I know the enterprise doesn't really embrace the iPhone particularly.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing to bring up here is we also don't know how Windows Phone 7 is going to embrace the enterprise either. I mean, like
we
you're
don't
saying,
know.
We don't know because in the past, Windows Mobile, that other platform that they're not going to support really anymore, was a big enterprise play. But Windows Phone 7 is definitely designed for the consumer first and foremost.
Hmm.
And they made a conscious choice to do that because they said we weren't focused at all on the consumer and now we're going to do the opposite. We're really going to focus on the consumer. So, they're definitely going to have, I'm sure, Exchange connectivity and mobile office support and all that. But we don't really know what they're going to do in terms of allowing enterprise apps to run on those phones or how they're going to get those apps on the phones. They haven't talked about whether they'll allow business customers to privately download or have to go through the App Store, the Microsoft App Store, which is going to be a nightmare. No one will do that. So there's a ton of unanswered questions, even for Microsoft, on the enterprise with the new platform.
Why is Microsoft turning its back on enterprise where it's been so strong in the phones?
Well, I don't think they necessarily are.
Yeah.
The issues that enterprises care about in terms of mobile devices are encryption and remote wipe. They don't care about apps. They want phone calls and email to be able to get through and for people to be able to look at documents and such. But, the idea that you need, a robust app store like the iTunes app store, which has 6 pages of apps devoted to making fart sounds.
I'm glad you counted, Ed.
I checked. That's like almost 300 separate apps there, specifically to that.
When they say 200,000, I don't know if they're really paying attention to that particular stat. That's funny.
Well, maybe they should be. And I think that's, the enterprises are really paying attention more to, I'll tell you, encryption is the thing that matters more than anything else.
You bet. You lose certificates and all of that stuff.
Well, yeah. Right. But you lose a phone. Now, it used to be you lost a laptop.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Not merely email certificates, but encryption for the phone itself, for the data.
Yeah, because these are little computers now, and they can have confidential data on them that is, that shockingly damaging to a corporation and can expose it to great liability. So the things, I would say apps are down, in the bottom half of the list to be charitable, and the ability to securely encrypt the contents of the device and to quickly remotely wipe the device. Now we know Apple can do that, at least with the new iPhone 4G.
They've always been able to do that. That's a nice feature.
Microsoft can do that too, though, but only on Windows Mobile. We don't know if they can do it, although we're assuming they're going to do it on Windows Phone 7.
Oh, and Ed, you were making a joke about the 4G. I got it. About the stolen 4G, which miraculously lost all its contents.
Sometimes I'm kind of subtle.
Yes.
These things. But really, apps are kind of a very minor story for enterprise adoption.
So that's why, wow, that's interesting. So even if you're making a consumer phone with Windows Phone, you don't need apps.
I mean, a lot of the things that people are going to want to do from an enterprise point of view are going to involve, you know, making a VPN connection to a host somewhere,
right,
and doing something in a web browser. So as long as you've got a secure web browser, a secure network connection, and and a device that you can count on to be compliant with whatever standards your industry requires you to be compliant with, things like HIPAA and Sarbanes-Oxley and such, then you'll have an entree into the enterprise. And that's also where Microsoft's strategy of partnering with hardware makers comes in. So it might be that, you know, phone maker X is going to really focus on the needs of a certain class of consumers, whereas, you know, Y and Z are going to make, you know, ruggedized, secure enterprise class phones.
How's the Kin doing? The Kin's clearly Microsoft's consumer phone.
I haven't followed it at all.
Yeah.
I followed it a little bit. It got widely panned by the press when it came out. But, you know, Microsoft argued, and I think somewhat correctly so, that we're not the audience for
it
that
phone.
It ain't
the press. It's the kids.
Right.
Right.
Right. And I've seen a few people give it to their kids and have their kids review it and look at it and, you know, have it around for a couple weeks. And the kids seem to like it. Teenagers, you know, but back to the issue of cost, it's prohibitively expensive as far as the data plan goes.
Yeah, that's Paul's been really unhappy about that. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to find out who said this in his farewell missive to his coworkers. Quote, in response to the curiosity, no chairs were thrown, no ultimatums served. I am not moving to Cupertino or Mountain View. I did not take a courier job. That's a clue, by the way. And I require no assistance finding the door. We'll talk about the... I just love that. We'll talk about who that was and why he's leaving Microsoft in just a little bit. Mary Jo Foley is our guest, a longtime Microsoft observer at ZDNet. It's so great to have you back again with us, even if you are upside down. And for those just tuning our video in, it's a Windows issue. We don't know. Just a driver. You know, I had to get that in. Little dig. Ed Bott is also here. He is a great Windows expert, award-winning author, and the author of Ed Bott's Microsoft Report at ZDNet.com. A couple of my old ZD colleagues.
Yes.
Today.
Indeed.
I was just looking at Ning, and there's a ZD Ziff Davis refugees group on Ning. Either of you ever want to join, I guess. Do you even work? You don't really work for who owns ZDNet? I don't even know anymore.
CBS.
CBS.
CBS Interactive.
So CNET bought it. CBS bought CNET. You now owned by CBS.
Yes.
That's not bad. That's good.
I actually have a post on my blog, on my personal blog, you know, ZD is not ZDNet and vice versa, that explains how that happened.
Because you get asked that a lot.
I don't get asked that a lot. People just
assume it. They don't ask.
Yeah. Assume it. Yeah. And so they say, one of my favorite Ziff Davis guys. No, we're not Ziff Davis.
But you were.
Yes.
We were.
The initials are there. I know, because I was at ZDTV.
It is a tribute to what Bill Ziff built there, that all the people associated with want to maintain that brand equity despite the changes in corporate ownership.
That's right. You know, that's a good point. Usually when you sell a company, you change the name, you know, CBS Interactive or whatever. But no, you're still ZDNet because that's got the cachet. Anyway, we're going to continue in just a second. I do want to talk to you about my friends at Citrix, who do, of course, GoToMeeting, GoToMyPC. I know you're very familiar with them. Citrix is also the big name in enterprise desktop sharing. They've got a remote desktop product that's specifically for the IT and support professional. If you support software or you support a group of users or maybe just mom, dad, cousin Al, This is the product for you. I've been using this for years. The new GoTo Assist Express is faster, better, easier to use, with a lot of features designed specifically for the support professional. For instance, you know, you don't have to have any software installed on the person you're supporting's machine. You just say, you can do this over the phone with them. You know, you get tired of going click start. Go to programs. I can't do this anymore. I should have done this with you, Mary Jo. When we were flipping you upside down, we could have done
yes,
this.
Yes, we should have tried
I
that.
I just say go to assist.com. Here's the ID. Boom, I'm in there. It takes 30 seconds for you to download just a little stub of software, and I'm in there, and it's Mac or PC, by the way. You can support Macs from PCs and vice versa, PC to PC, Mac to Mac. It's just fantastic stuff. You have 8 sessions at once if you want, and there's a good reason for that, not because you're a glutton for punishment, because you start installing one, a scan on another, you're fixing another. You can move on. You don't have to wait around. You can find out what software is running, exactly what version of Windows, exactly what security software, what's going on in the background. You can drag and drop fixes from your computer to the remote computer. I mean, just goes on and on. Really great stuff. Try it free for 30 days right now. Go to assist.com/windows. GOTO assist.com/windows. You try it free for 30 days. They have day passes if you do this occasionally, but if you're a pro, you're going to want to have this in your toolkit all the time. Just the best. Go to assist.com/windows. So the person who wrote that email, of course, Jay Allard, who is leaving Microsoft. And I think the circumstances are kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Mary Jo, you wrote a little bit about this.
Yes, they're very interesting. So Jay Allard, last we heard, was spearheading the Courier project for Microsoft, which was
I thought Gizmodo made it up.
No, it was real. It was real.
So I thought Gizmodo had this, you know, concept video, and they kind of hyped it as if it was really going to happen. And then it got Microsoft says we're not doing it like they ever were doing it. So it was in the labs. How far along had it gotten?
Well, that's what we don't know. We don't know how far along it was, you know, and it was definitely a Skunk Works project. I don't think it ever looked like those concept videos probably, but supposedly right. Jay Allard was the guy spearheading it. And, you know, he did something similar with the Xbox and the Zune. He kind of went off in a little sequestered area with a small team and built those products and then launched them. And a lot of people at Microsoft didn't even know those products were coming. So it seemed like he was going to try to do that again. Then they killed the Courier project. Supposedly Steve Ballmer said, no, we're not going to do it. And next thing you know, you hear Jay Allard's quitting. Jay Allard denies he quit because the Courier was canceled. That's what I had heard when I first heard he might leave.
So he's really, I mean, he was the guy that we all sang his praises with Xbox and Zune. Was it Zune? I mean, he's really like he's like the consumer guy, the god, the man who knows what humans want.
Yes, that's how they positioned him anyway.
Do you think it's credible that it was all about the Courier?
I don't think it was all about the Courier.
There is a reorg going on, right?
There is. Right. So, you know, he leaves. It's announced that he's leaving the same day that it's announced Robbie Bach is retiring. And Robbie Bach is the president of the Entertainment and Devices Division.
Right.
So they're going to disband his entire division. They're going to have the mobile guy and the gaming guy report straight to Steve Ballmer. So, in effect, Ballmer is now running mobile and gaming.
Does that send a chill? Sends a chill down my spine. Does that send a chill down others, or is it just my imagination? Steve doesn't seem like the guy for that. Maybe they need. Maybe that's until they find somebody.
Well, but he's not running engineering.
I think it's until they find somebody.
He's not running engineering. Right. He's running strategy.
Right.
And he always has been. Let's be clear.
Ultimately, I guess.
Huh? He's the CEO, yeah. And his background is sales and partner opportunities. So that's always been his bailiwick. You know, I don't know why they decided to yank these two guys out of their chairs right now, but it might be just because they decided that I have a feeling that in both cases the product teams have reached a point in their engineering where they're done, and now they're just getting things ready to ship. you know, bug, final bug fixes, final polish, getting ready to hand off to device makers in the case of Windows Phone 7 and stuff. So the engineering part is done. And now they have to get all of the partnership and marketing agreements. So it makes sense to have somebody come on board now to take over that. I don't think that Steve is going to be in charge of that for very long.
Right.
No, I don't either.
There was an interesting story. Did you see the story? Was it Briar Dudley who noted that the CEO of T-Mobile USA resigned this week, and he's up in Redmond.
Something's going on in Redmond.
There was a kind of weird rumor that Microsoft might buy T-Mobile.
Well, or that they might hire him to run that division.
Huh. You do wonder why these big companies don't just buy a phone company. They've all got lots of cash on hand.
Yeah.
And maybe they just don't want to get that business. But it seems like...
Well, Microsoft, that's the opposite of Microsoft's business model. And it's the opposite of Apple's business model.
It has been up to now, hasn't it? Right.
Yeah.
But Microsoft sells licenses.
Right.
For software. If they want to get into the manufacturing business for products. In fact, what I wrote
Think about it, a phone company is just a service, because they don't build the handsets either.
They don't build the handsets either. Yeah.
You're buying the pipes is kind of what you're buying.
Right.
So it's almost like the motion picture industry owning the theaters. You own the distribution. Wouldn't be I don't know if it'd be approved. It wouldn't be necessarily a bad part of the business. Then it's HTC that's buying the software or whatever. I don't know. That's a crazy idea.
It's a big, it's a big mess in this country.
It is such a mess compared to any. Well, this is actually the tragedy of being first. They often say the reason that that Germany has become such an industrial giant is because it was raised in World War II, so they could start fresh. And we have this disadvantage of we kind of created the cell phone industry, so there's this great mishmash of standards and legacy equipment. It's not good. It's the same thing in the operating system business, isn't it? I mean, you know, Microsoft, one of the things that holds Microsoft back is legacy. Or is it my painting too broad a...
Well, everything, it's their greatest strength and their greatest weakness.
Right.
When things are working well and there's a good roadmap that takes you into the future, then backwards compatibility is your best friend. When you have something that's broken and unpopular and replaced by a very popular, very successful product like the iPhone, backwards compatibility becomes a great burden and something to overcome with great pain. So that's the position that Microsoft finds themselves in right now.
Right. Getting back to this reorg thing, this is not something unusual for Microsoft. In fact, they do this fairly frequently, it seems like, yeah?
They do.
Correct.
And, the timing is always kind of, sometimes it's announced at the end of the year, sometimes beginning of the year, sometimes it's like mid-year review. So they always are shuffling people around and changing up teams and all that. And, when I wrote about Bach and Allard leaving, I said, both of the guys have been there and they've been strong for their teams or whatever. But it's also good to shake things up, too. And I agree with that. It's like a good time right now for them to be shaking things up.
In the product cycle.
In the product cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Allard's title was Chief Experience Officer.
I knew. Yeah, I remember it was something like that.
Lofty. Yeah.
I remember meeting him when Xbox came out.
My dog just walked into the room and reminded me that I have not fed them lunch yet.
Go ahead and feed the dog's lunch. Go ahead and feed the dog's lunch.
I'll be back in
hungry,
60 seconds.
We don't want hungry canines.
No. They might start gnawing on my leg.
He did Zune. He did yes. Xbox.
Yep.
And do we know where he's going?
He is staying. He's staying on as an advisor to Microsoft.
Okay.
And also, he's going to go do some things in extreme adventure sports, which is like his big passion.
He said his life up to now has been 95% Microsoft, 5% living, and he's going to flip the ratio and do 5% Microsoft and then live. And I'm sure these guys make enough money and enough stock that at a certain point you just go, I've been working really hard. Maybe I could climb a rock. for a while.
Exactly.
Now. Yep. This isn't the only change. There's something called Windows Web Services now.
Yes.
What is that?
Yeah, so there were a bunch of weird little fallout things that got kind of overshadowed by the actual reorg. But one of the things I thought was interesting was Microsoft took this guy named Antoine LeBlond, who has been part of the Office team for a while. And they moved him under Steven Sinofsky on Windows. And he's going to be running a project called Windows Web Services. So nobody knows what this is, really. It's not Windows Live. It has something to do with Windows Update, but Microsoft's not saying anything beyond that, pretty much. It's just like he's going to be running some project that I bet we're going to hear more about as we start hearing about Windows 8.
Steve Ballmer's email I'm quoting you says, Integral Windows Service is the today deliver updates, solutions, community, and depth information for the Windows consumer.
Yeah, it was that last one, depth information. That was the one.
I love corporate speak. I just love it. No idea what that means. So, but it's not Windows Live, which it sounds like it's Windows Live, or it sounds like maybe under Ray Ozzie or something. But it's not.
In fact, specifically said it's not Windows.
It's not
Live,
cloud. Right? It's something else. Yeah. Okay.
Another interesting little tidbit, Leo, I think will care a lot about, was they also are going to take the Mac business unit at Microsoft, and they're moving that into Office.
But because that's really what it is, right? It's Office for the Macintosh.
But so a lot of people have been tweeting and guessing like, oh, so this must mean finally Windows Office and Mac Office are going to get even more alike and have better interoperability and all that. I mean, you'd hope and assume, but that was an interesting little
They've been kind of in a real staggered schedule, but they've gotten closer because the Mac Office is due this fall, I think. And of course, Office 2010 just came out. So it used to be a year off. So now they're a little bit closer. Maybe they will at some point. Merge. A new engineering chief, Kurt Delbene, senior vice president of Office Business Productivity Group, is now head of the engineering responsibilities for the Office business. I'm sorry. former Live Platform Services head David Treadwell moves out of the window. I don't know why I'm reading this out loud. This is the usual.
Some people around. Yeah.
the one thing that's kind of odd is that they're not replacing Robbie Bach, but that's not unusual, I guess. They've done it before where you just say, we don't need that person anymore.
And they realign business organizations, they combine things. A lot of it is where does the entertainment stuff go? And where does the devices stuff go? And are they the same? Because you have entertainment. If you think of Zoom and Xbox Live as services that can go on PCs, and then you think of multiple devices that they have, which can be phones and such, are those the entertainment thing covers the entire spectrum of hardware that Microsoft is about, whereas the devices category is very specific. It actually means phones now. So it does make sense to sort of, from a strategic point of view, to rethink that organization.
But does it mean the end of entertainment?
I'm kind of curious where Surface ends up in all of this.
Surface?
Microsoft, you know, that big ass table.
They still sell that?
Yeah, they still sell that. And, that technology is informing kind of what they're doing with touch in other divisions. So they don't know, they say, where they're going to put Surface yet. Is it going to go to Windows? Is it going to go to gaming? I don't know.
Yeah, because touch is now everywhere in everything they do. So Surface, you think, is the R&D for touch, is where the touch begins?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was kind of where they made a first major stand on multi-touch.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And why did they kill Courier? I mean, given that Courier was the real deal, which is, I didn't.
Well, to answer that question, I think you have to take a step back and say, was Courier that device in the one concept video? And I think the answer is no. I think that there was an effort to say, is it possible for us to come up with something that is sort of a well-managed reference device in a tablet form factor that that we can build, sell, develop, license, whatever the business model is there. But it was basically, my guess is that what that was all about was taking their tablet technology and saying, can we productize this. And they just said, you know, we can't. At least that's not a place where we want to spend a lot of R&D dollars right now.
Yeah. I have to think that there might be that Microsoft might be in a bad position when it comes to tablets. When you see HP acquiring WebOS, it really feels like they acquired that because they felt like a tablet, like the Slate that they had pre-announced, but then decided not to do. Maybe they had said, maybe this shouldn't be running Windows 7. What do you guys think on about Windows 7 on tablet? Yeah.
There's an amazing number of assumptions in that statement,
Leo. Yeah, there are.
Okay.
One, we don't know about HP. We don't know if they're still making the Windows 7 tab.
So that was just a rumor that they had killed Slate.
Right.
They never confirmed that.
They won't confirm it, and Microsoft won't confirm it.
Right.
And in fact, exactly the opposite. I think, didn't Phil McKinney, is that his name? Didn't he just say last week, "Don't believe everything you read"?
Ah, okay.
At a big HP schmooze fest that they had, but I think he said so very pointedly, not acknowledging that rumor, but also sort of saying, "Hey, it might be completely wrong."
Well, I think while you can make a case that one of the reasons touch computers haven't done well in the past is that Windows wasn't very well suited to tablet computing, and I say that even though there are fanatics who just love it, but it just never was a huge product. That Windows 7, in contrast, really does have a lot of touch and multi-touch built in. Maybe somebody's saying, well, we should not assume that Windows does not belong on a tablet just because it hasn't succeeded in the past.
Right.
Okay. Yep. But why is HP buying WebOS?
I think they're buying it more for the phone, right? Like they will have they said they will have a WebOS tablet, but they didn't have a mobile play, really.
Right.
Until they bought them.
They had the iPad.
Yeah.
Woohoo. HP has been making mobile devices from handheld to 17-inch and 20-inch notebooks for as long as I can remember, the full range of them. So it is not, they have always been in the mobile device business. Mm-hmm. And so this is not out of character for them at all. My guess is also that it was almost an irresistible price for them. They got some engineering assets out of it. They undoubtedly got some patents out of it. They didn't get the UI guy who just went over to work for Google. Yep. But a company the size of HP with as much cash as they have in the bank, I don't think for them this is not a huge acquisition. And there's lots of ways that they can use that technology.
What's $16 billion here or there? It's not really just a little chump change. Does Microsoft, there has been this kind of deafening silence. There were all these tablets at CES, many of which were running Windows. And, you know, where are they? Are they coming? Are people saying, well, let's reassess now that we've seen Apple's tablet?
Well, the PC ecosystem launches products in the fall.
So they're coming in the fall.
Yeah.
Well, if they're going to come, they're coming in the fall. I don't think it's Apple tends to launch its products at the beginning of the year. That's the way they work. But the PC ecosystem is all about the holiday selling season, and you tend to find big launches of stuff in the fall, especially because a lot of hardware companies just had big refreshes last fall with the launch of Windows 7. They would, it would make sense for them to have, they do annual refreshes. So I would expect if there's going to be any movement in that area to start seeing a lot of things after Labor Day.
Right. And so good. But do you like the, remember that wonderful Lenovo, detachable thing?
Swivel.
Yeah. there are a lot of really cool things. And I do think Windows 7, I think people don't realize how good Windows 7 is with touch. I do think.
Well, I have a touch. I have a Dell Latitude XT2 right here by my side. And it's a great, tablet PC. It can be a touch computer when you want it to be. It can be a notebook when you want it to be. The thing is that it's not optimized for either of those things. So somebody who just wants one or the other, you know, is going to find themselves a little bit disappointed. Somebody who wants both of those things is in a niche about, you know, about yay big.
I have an HP tablet from about 4 or 5 years ago that's sitting right here. And, you know, I mean, there were a lot of these for a while. I mean, Bill Gates was Mr. Tablet.
Yep. But I'll tell you what, though. I would expect, so you've got, you know, what's interesting is that look at what happened. Look at the progression of technology from Windows Vista to Windows 7, right? Windows Vista, a lot of people were unhappy about it. And yet all of the architecture that's in there is the basic architecture of Windows 7. So what they did with Windows 7 was to go in and refine, polish, and fix the things that either needed refining and polishing or needed fixing. I think in terms of tablet technology, the idea of taking Windows 7 and turning it into a dedicated tablet is not good, because it was never designed to be a dedicated tablet. If I had to guess, and this is pure guesswork on my part, but if I had to guess, there is going to be a significant effort in Windows 8 to be able to flip a switch software-wise on that, where it will run in a dedicated tablet mode and it will run very well, because all the technology I can give you a very impressive demo of a bunch of things on this tablet, you know, which is using modern hardware and Windows 7, but you know, ultimately it's got a bunch of the cruft and baggage that goes with a desktop mouse and keyboard driven platform on it there, which sort of interferes with the experience. So I think you have to, you know, if you look at what Vista and how Vista turned into 7, I think it's highly likely that we will see the Windows 7 touch and tablet type features turned into a more polished, more interesting product.
I'm kind of the opinion that that these tablets are better with a mobile operating system than a shrunken desktop operating system.
But the only reason you think that is because the only people who've designed one of those so far have been who've designed a device that is dedicated for touch have been
Apple and Google.
People using mobile.
Right.
People using operating systems that are like that. You could actually put, if you put a, you know, some good software engineers into a room, you know, for 6 months or so, and let them hide the desktop parts of Windows and build a Windows 7 machine that is you know, completely optimized for touch, doesn't have a keyboard, doesn't have a mouse. They could deliver a very, very interesting product to you
on that. I think Ed might agree with this too. There's like a corporate policy and statement at Microsoft that Windows 7 is our operating system for tablets. That's it. Ballmer even said that this week when somebody said to him, why not put like Windows Phone OS on a tablet? And he said, no, that's not what we're doing. But I think we are going to see some OEMs do that. And it'll be interesting to compare those kind of tablets running Windows Phone OS with tablets running Windows 8 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. But
they could also run Windows Embedded.
Right.
They could.
Right.
With a shell, a specialized shell something.
Yeah, a touch shell. Yeah. But you like the X-T2 a lot, Ed.
I do. It's a very nice computer. The 1280x800 screen. So here's one example of the trade-offs that you have to do with it. It's a 1280x800 screen, but in order for the touch features to really work well, you have to bump the dots per inch on it up so that all of the objects on the screen are
touch them. Yeah.
Well, right. And so at that point, you've got things that are some things that are perfectly sized, but some things that are just too big.
Right.
And so you don't have a lot of and so what you really want is for a UI designer, and this is what Apple has done extremely well with the iPad, is for a UI designer to say, this needs to be big, this needs to be small, mm-hmm. this needs to be 100% of a web page size, and then you wind up with a device that's optimized for it. So I don't think it's the fact that they chose an optimized or a mobile OS for that device that is important. It's that they optimized it for that. They designed the hardware and the software to work perfectly together. Now, take an iPad, put it into one of those pretty little stands there, and attach a keyboard to it, and now it's not such a good experience. it's great until you have to select some text because it doesn't support a mouse.
Can't do it. Yep.
You have to reach out with your finger and actually use your finger as sort of a lousy mouse. And so there's the optimization that they deliberately chose not to do.
Right. That makes sense, though. They said this is the form factor. This is how it's going to be. And that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting because Dell, in their ad for or their page for the X-T2, shows shows a radiologist using it, which I think is a big niche, the medical niche for a touch for tablets in general. We're going
to
take a break.
I just like having it when I'm on an airplane. I like being able to flip it over so that the keyboard is hidden. And if I'm reading things.
Perfect for that.
It's perfect. And the guy in front of me, when he leans his thing back, it's not going to crush my computer.
I just have it
sort of propped up on my, on my knee or on the tray table there. And I can actually work with it, where with a 14-inch or larger notebook, I might not be able to get anything done at all.
Ed Bott is with us from ZDNet. He's a veteran Microsoft watcher, former editor-in-chief of PC Computing, and an old friend. It's great to have you here, Ed. And, of course, Mary Jo Foley, who, yes, I know, she's upside down. It's funny. People come into the chat, and they go, do you know that Mary Jo's upside down? No, really? Really? She bought we figured it out. You bought the Australian version of the Asus laptop, and that's the problem.
There we go.
Yeah. So we know that. But you know what? It doesn't matter because all the good intelligent stuff is spilling right into the show, right out of the top of her head. So Mary Jo Foley is also here, who is the author of All Things, the All About Microsoft blog, and also of Microsoft 2.0. From Wiley & Sons. Mary Jo is on Twitter as Mary Jo Foley, MaryJoFoley. Ed Bott is EdBott on Twitter. And we will continue in just a bit with these two. Paul Thurrott, in case you didn't hear me at the beginning, has the week off because he's in Lisbon enjoying the fine wine. I don't know why. I just get the impression of Paul drinking out of a Bota bag like this. All week. I don't know why. Just that's a lot of sangria pouring in there, and I don't know. Maybe it's just my imagination, and maybe not. I do want to mention our friends at Carbonite Pro. If you've ever seen or heard me talk about Carbonite, you know that this is to me exactly what backup should be: automatic, so you don't have to think about it. Encrypted, so it's absolutely private, and in the cloud. So if the worst happens, there's a fire or a flood or something terrible happens to your computer, and maybe your backup as well, thieves break in and steal it all, you still have a good backup you can rely on up on the cloud, up at Carbonite servers. But in fact, so many people like this that even though it's aimed at consumers, it's a computer-per-computer solution, that a lot of small businesses are starting to use Carbonite. And Carbonite found this out and said, wait a minute, we're missing an opportunity here. They have designed Carbonite Pro for you, small business owners. A single account, a single dashboard can back up all the computers in your enterprise. It's all automatic. It's all encrypted, so you're absolutely secure using AES 256-bit encryption, the strongest encryption you can get. You control the keys. You know, privacy is guaranteed, and I know that's important when your financials and so forth are going up. We're using it, and then I completely trust it. But the point is, you can get that data back, and imagine what it would be, what it would mean to your business. If a disaster happens, you lose not only your computers, but you lose the backup, the local backup, your network-attached storage drives, your SAN. You're out of business. I mean, how do you reconstruct all that? You have paper? What, are you going to enter it all in again? That's why you've got to have a good backup solution, and it has to include a cloud solution, and I think Carbonite Pro is a great choice. Give it a try right now. You get a month free. This is a great way to see how it works, get the feel for it. Just go to CarbonitePro.com. You can sign up. 1 month free. Windows only right now. They are working on a Mac solution, but most businesses are running on Windows, let's face it. So I think this is a good choice for all of you. CarbonitePro.com. 30 days free. Backup done right. Oh, and did I mention, and I love this, as somebody who for a long time at where I worked for ZD, when you lose the data, you know, accidentally trash the file, you're going to show the boss that afternoon, or you know, accidentally screw up your hard drive, you have to make that perp walk down the hall to IT and beg them to restore your data. It's so embarrassing. Carbonite Pro, you can let your users restore their own data. They don't have to bug you. CarbonitePro.com, great for small business. Give it a try today. One of the things we didn't mention on the reorg, and I know this is a special interest to you, Mary Jo, is Rebecca Norlander.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't a lot of women at Microsoft. Is that the case? No, there are. There must be.
About one quarter of the employees of Microsoft are women, but executive-wise, very few. Rebecca Norlander, for people who don't know, is Jay Allard's wife, and we don't know what she's going to do. She actually is between jobs right now at Microsoft. She says she's looking around inside the company for what she wants to do next. But I wonder if Jay Allard quitting is going to influence her direction at all.
Is she an engineer? Is her background
tech?
She
is. Yes. She's an engineer, and she was Ray Ozzie's technical assistant for a few years, and she managed the XPSP2 project. She's done a lot of pretty high-profile things at Microsoft.
Does Microsoft, I mean, of course, there are women in HR, probably in public relations. Do they make an effort to get women in engineering
and
management?
They do make an effort. There's fewer people to choose from out there. There are, I think, like 12% of engineering graduates are women right now, but They try to get people from unconventional backgrounds and kind of get them on the computer science engineering track if that isn't something they picked originally. So yeah. They're trying, but there still aren't very many of them.
You know, we just lost our director of engineering, Colleen Kelly, to Google. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure one of the reasons Google was thrilled to snap her up is because she's a very talented female engineer. And you know, there are people like Jerry Ellsworth, who's the chip designer we've had on before. But you're right. They're so few that they stand out.
Yep.
And maybe we can do something about that. But that's good. Well, we'll watch Rebecca Norlander with interest to see what happens. So at Google I/O, Google really pushed the HTML5 strategy. I think they did a lot of FUD about Apple and a little bit about Microsoft too. Microsoft's response. We've got an HTML5 strategy. What is Microsoft's HTML HTML5 strategy?
They have promised full support for HTML5 in IE9. They're not going to go back and redo IE8. They're going to, you know, in IE9. And
but that I should point out, HTML5 isn't a standard yet, and so it makes sense. I mean, it's not like you can rush and do it now because there's no standard yet.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
It's completely appropriate to wait.
Their two biggest rivals, web, you know, the Mozilla and WebKit engines have proprietary tags in their implementations of HTML5 right now because they have to, because there aren't any standards for those things. But that's sort of the nature of standards. That's the way that Wi-Fi draft end standard worked for years. There did come a point where you could say, okay, we know it's going to be this and we can build products based on it. But there is still a lot of stuff that's up in the air about HTML5. But I think the thing that's most interesting, the one thing that got all the attention last week was about the video format
WebM.
Is going to be supported natively,
right?
And so Microsoft is going to ship an H.264 codec, and they're going to support playback through that in IE9 with Windows.
And the reason that the Mozilla didn't want to do that is because and Microsoft and we should point out Apple as well both support H.264 is because for them $5 million yearly license fee is nothing. But Mozilla as an open source, well, actually, truthfully, for Mozilla, it's probably nothing too.
For Mozilla, it's probably nothing either, except that you have to pay it. You have to pay it on the basis of how many products you ship, and since it's a free product, you can't really audit those things particularly well.
Right.
And
so they could, they wouldn't even know how to pay for it, I guess.
They would have to do one of those ugly things that people did that Microsoft did in the XP era, which is that if you wanted an MP3 encoder back then, you had to go out and
download it
and pay right. $10, right. $5 or $10, and download it. And
now,
and
ironically, that's kind of how Microsoft said it's going to support VP8/WebM. This new Google codec is, we'll support it, but you got to download the codec.
Well, but so all you have to do is, but I don't understand how that's different from the way things work now. Microsoft does not have support for QuickTime files
right.
in Windows.
Right.
And so you have, so you
have
get
to get
prompted.
QuickTime. Right.
You go get QuickTime, you install the QuickTime software and Shazam.
That makes it a second class citizen though. I mean, the first class citizens on our platform are the ones where you don't have to get a plugin. Flash and H.264. You don't need a plugin for that, right? It plays.
Flash you have to download.
Yeah, but it comes with I guess you're right. I mean,
it doesn't cost anything.
It kind of comes
Adobe
with
doesn't
it,
charge a licensing
right.
fee.
You're right.
To install it.
But H.264, that plays natively, does it not? You don't have to get anything for that, do you?
Well, you will not have to get anything
with
that.
With
it will install the codec with that. And now the other thing to think about here is that this is not just sort of Microsoft's arbitrary decision where we're going to pick this one. This is the industry's decision. H.264 is the primary codec used for Blu-ray discs. It is supported in the silicon of every modern video adapter.
So you have, NVIDIA has built an AT. All of these have built-in H.264 encode and decode
on the
hardware.
So when you play back an H.264 file, the amount of CPU usage is very, very low.
Right.
Whereas with other formats, that even though they may be able to compress to the same size as the H.264 codec, they're not going to be able to take advantage of that hardware acceleration. And as a result, you're either going to have crummy performance on some devices or you're going to have very high CPU usage, the very things that people have complained about with Flash,
and,
for example.
And for portable devices, it's bad for battery.
Very bad.
Yeah. So it seems like then Microsoft's just saying we're going to support standards and we'll support this WebM in just as we support Flash. You download a plugin. That seems like a sensible response.
So then there was a lot of talk about Ogg Theora, another standard there. I mean, look, if you go back to almost 10 years now to when Windows XP was being developed, go and look at the list of codecs, video codecs and audio codecs that were supported by the operating system back there. It was just enormous. And it was a real problem. And each one of those codecs that you install represents a potential security issue that has to be patched and maintained. Each one of them represents a potential source of instability and problems, crashes on the platform, or slowdowns in performance, and so the idea of saying, look, we're going to go with the industry standard from other software companies, other hardware companies, just seems logical.
You wrote a really good post, which a couple of weeks ago, which I quoted on This Week in Google, or maybe it was on Twit, about the actual cost. Because there are a couple of concerns about H.264. One is that it's patent encumbered, and that it's someday MPEG-LA, which is a consortium of rights holders, might suddenly, say, hey, it's been free up till now, just as Unisys started to do with GIF, but now we want some money here. But you point this out. This is not going to be a problem.
Well, yeah, I went back and looked at the, I actually did, shockingly, some reporting.
Shocking.
Looked up the numbers.
How dare you?
Look up the numbers. If you are playing back video and not charging your users for it, there's no fee due. If you have a commercial service, you have a subscription-based video service, a Hulu for example, and you used H.264 as your format, the licensing fee would be the equivalent of a couple of pennies per month for each subscriber that you have there. For software that is not an operating system for, you know, for the for companies that make video playback software and such, the cost ranges from 10 it's free up for the first 100,000 units that you ship each year. So if you really are a small company, you don't have to pay.
And there's a cap.
And there's a cap. And after that, it's basically, it starts at 20 cents and goes down to 10 cents per copy that you've sold. So if you're selling, so the people who are complaining the most and justifiably have a cause to complain are those who believe that all software should be free, because throwing a dime into a free software package, they don't have a model for collecting
right.
that. I think Ubuntu has figured out a way to deal with that. I'm not an expert on that, but
they do. They have my credit card number now, so there is some sort of means of doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's, you know, repositories for those. There's commercial repositories and free repositories.
Ubuntu does some interesting things. For instance, there's a proprietary driver for my lap. I have a Dell 17 that I put Linux on. The reason it's fresh in my mind, I put Ubuntu on it. It dual boot with Windows 7, which it does very nicely automatically. And it says when you boot it up, there's a proprietary ATI driver that this machine could use. We don't supply it, but if you want, we'll install it. Just understand that you're going to have to get any patches from the manufacturer. It's not going to be part of our upgrade. And then if you give them a credit card, you can absolutely buy commercial stuff. And there's Ubuntu One, and there's all sorts of. I think they've handled this very gracefully. Actually, Mozilla might have more of a problem because they're not going to set up. You know, who's going to give Mozilla their credit card? So do you think WebM is then, what is the point of WebM? Because by the way, both Microsoft and Apple both say this may also be encumbered by patents. It may not be as open and free as Google asserts.
Yeah.
So what's the point then? Is this just Google?
I think it's, in part, it is anything but Microsoft, right? I
mean, right.
And you can't totally blame them. This is how they're trying to compete. So.
And anything but Apple.
Right.
And anything but Apple.
I think it's so interesting how the industry is now kind of making these alliances. You guys have followed this for a while, as have I, but I can't remember this kind of stratification of the industry before like this. And the viciousness between Google and Apple, is that precedented? I remember we used to say Windows ain't done till Lotus won't run.
Right.
Right.
But that wasn't on this level.
But you know what you have right now, which you've never had before? You have three companies, each of which has a monopoly.
Right.
Okay? Each one of them, two of them are unregulated monopolies. So what you've got is each one of them trying as best they can to leverage their monopoly platform to grow in the areas where they don't have monopolies.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft is severely constrained in their ability to leverage their monopoly because
the government
is still under government
right.
supervision.
Right.
There are lawyers who will be in there in a heartbeat
right.
to stop them from doing anything like that. Whereas Google with its monopoly in search and Apple with its monopoly in digital music are both doing their best to extend those strengths out into other areas. And so I think that's really what you're seeing here. And there isn't even a model in the movie industry. You know, normally it's Predator versus Alien or, you know, Godzilla versus Mothra. There isn't really a precedent for three giant monsters.
Yeah, somebody said I was confusing Mozilla with Godzilla, but it is kind of like that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, well, the original Mozilla is, you know, sort of a cute-looking orange Godzilla.
Yeah, that's right, breathing fire. No, that's a very good point. And so they're each trying to assert their monopoly into the other person's kind of space, and that's very interesting. You're right, I don't think it's been like this before.
Three-dimensional chess.
It is. You know, it's like Star Trek chess. Yeah.
Yeah.
but that is, in a way, a sign of maturity of the industry that they've gotten to this point now where they can be so dominant And there's so much money to be made. Now, your colleague John Carroll, in his ZDNet blog of developers, who talks says that Google TV is going to cost Microsoft the TV space. Mary Jo, does that seem like that Google TV is that big a threat to Media Center?
Well, you know, Ed knows more about Media Center than me, but. And I was watching all the tweets go by as Google was previewing Google TV. And pretty much without exception, people were saying Media Center's had a lot, if not all of the stuff before.
I was underwhelmed. Like
You know, I think John Carroll's column was really interesting because he used to work for Microsoft in the TV division. So he, you know, you think, okay, he's probably going to root for Microsoft and say, you know, Microsoft had some pretty cool stuff. But he makes some very interesting points there about... It's Microsoft's to lose, and they have a lot of things right now that are in disarray in their TV strategy. And, you know, competition between Media Center and Xbox, between IPTV and other things they're doing in TV. So I think he made a very interesting case. Like, Microsoft needs to get its own house in order, or it's just going to lose by attrition almost.
Right.
I agree completely with that. It was a, and actually, John had a follow up post to that as well, which was even longer and equally insightful. They were both really, really, really good reading for people who are interested in this sort of thing. I think the most telling thing, though, is that, you know, at the moment, Microsoft doesn't have a Media Center team to speak of. They were sort of...
They're gone.
They were sort of broken apart and divided up between the, you know, the Zune team and the Windows Mobile team, and, you know, off to various parts of the infrastructure. And so I do believe there are a couple of interesting efforts at work in Microsoft that are probably connected with the mysterious web services, Windows web services that we were talking about.
Maybe that's the depth.
That this is all turning into.
Right.
But in the meantime, Microsoft does not have the ability to react to this until Windows 8. And Windows 8 is a 2012.
So they're just going to be on the sidelines until that happens.
Well, they still have Media Center, but there's nothing, you know.
Here's one of the things Carroll says is that the thing that he finds the most frustrating is Xbox, which is the only device. Microsoft, only TV-attached product made by Microsoft.
Right.
And he says it doesn't make any sense to restrict the network access of custom applications. He says unless you're Facebook, Netflix, Last.fm, you can't use that Ethernet or Wi-Fi connection in the Xbox.
And that's a great point that he makes, which is that basically the Xbox 360 is the only credible competitor to TV.
And it
right
could
now.
Be so good.
It could be awesome, and it could probably be done fairly fairly quickly. You know,
they could open that up very quickly, sure.
This is where normally we would just sit back and let Paul go on for about 20 years.
This is his area, isn't it? Maybe next week we'll find out what he thinks. But absolutely, this is his area. He watches a lot of TV. When he's drinking from that Boda bag, it's the...
He's watching this right now, and he's going,
"Oh, my show! I'll get you, Laporte.
But the other thing I think that that Microsoft really desperately needs to do is to come up with different flavors of the Xbox 360. Some things that
what would you do? That's interesting. What would you do?
Well, for example, I am not a gamer. I don't want a game controller. I want something that, in fact, I have a small form factor Media Center PC in my living room attached to the big screen TV, and it works great. But I would much rather have a dedicated device that is basically an Xbox without all that gaming silliness in it.
That's a set top box you're talking about.
But I can already, if I get past the gaming blades, you know, and all of the Xbox Live stuff, I can already kind of get to that with an Xbox 360. I can, you know, I have to take one path to go to the Media Center extender mode, and I have to take another path to go to the Xbox Media Player mode.
Where I find Microsoft a little frustrating, because they're so big. And they have so many irons in the fire, but they don't seem to have that laser intensity or laser focus that, and Google's not particularly focused, but Apple seems to have that good focus. And, I remember the reason they made the Xbox is because they wanted to make cable companies use a Microsoft set-top box, but the cable company said, well, in order to run your software, we need to make these things so expensive because we have to put more RAM in, bigger processors. It kills our profit, so we're not going to use Microsoft set-top boxes. So, it's my memory, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that was one of the reasons why Xbox came along. It could be a stealth set-top box. And whoever had that strategy either disappeared or forgot about it, and they made a game machine, but they never really capitalized on that.
They started targeting only Nintendo,
right,
and then Sony as the competition.
But there, now the competition now is very clearly Roku and Google and all these other set-top boxes that give you access to the internet.
Interdivision competition, right?
Oh, interesting.
Inside Microsoft.
Interesting.
It's like, just like with the tablet, they want it to be Windows based,
right,
not Windows phone based, right? So remember, there was this whole controversy back in the day with what was going to be the hub of the living room. And
right,
Bill Gates wanted it to be the PC.
Right.
They didn't want it to be the TV.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of like different parts of Microsoft have different missions, and they're pushing their mission, and depending on who's in favor, they win.
Right.
At that time.
Right. That's a problem.
It is.
That's a problem. Yep. It keeps them from capitalizing on what is a huge advantage. I mean, they've got how many millions of Xbox 360s on people's TVs?
Hanging off the TV. I want to back up a little bit to something that you said there about the competition being Roku and Google TV and all this. No, the competition is your cable company's DVR.
Uh-huh.
Which
is crap, by the way.
They're all crap, but you know what? They have, but most people, they have the advantage of you call the cable company, say, send the guy out, plug it in,
right,
and if it breaks, I call you, and you either help me fix it, or you send the guy out, and he replaces it.
And good luck getting a cable card from them if you want to use anything that's not sold by the cable company.
Yeah, I actually haven't had that problem. I've had pretty good luck with cable cards. But the real issue for, you know, Google TV seems to be trying to repeat Microsoft's mistake, only bigger and with less revenue.
They have a partnership with Dish. So if you are a Dish customer,
yeah,
then you got this thing, this box that you get from, you know, your satellite company.
Microsoft had a partnership with DirecTV for quite a while there. They even actually demonstrated DirecTV boxes directly connected to Media Center PCs.
Really?
And those products existed. They were announced at CES. There was a ship schedule. There were test units out there. And then DirecTV pulled the plug on it. So until
do you think that was the movie companies that said, no, you're not hooking a PC up to this?
No, I think it was DirecTV going, you know, I think it was a combination of the economy collapsing.
Too expensive, and too complicated.
It's too expensive, it's too complicated. This is going to cost us more in support than we can ever possibly make back on it.
Yeah.
Let's just cut our losses now. We're not going to ship this product.
Interesting.
And the people who they would sell it to would be the most demanding segment.
Right.
You know, they would want perfect performance, and they'd be tweaking it and hacking it. And,
right.
You know, so I think somebody made a legitimate business decision there. So Dish and Google are going to have the, perhaps the exact same issues.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting. You predict that Dish will not ever come out with a Google TV?
No, I do not. The one advantage that they have is that they can sort of, you know, they could sort of use this. It's Android based, right?
So yes.
So they would use Android as the basis for their, for a Dish product. And, you know, I don't know what Dish is using now as their platform. Right. But if they can cut their licensing costs down for that, it could be actually enough to make it worthwhile for them. But, you know, it's not a high margin business, and it's not a fun business to be in.
So I should save the E3 conversation for when Paul gets back, because he, after all, is like the big gamer, right?
Yeah, I'm just going to, you know, I'll just scratch my head and go.
Same.
Yeah, because we are going to be down there covering E3. And I think, you know, Microsoft's got a press conference, as they do every year. And I think they're going to show Natal again. They showed it last year, but I think we're getting close to Natal shipping. Yep. I don't know if that's going to be a big deal.
I think it might have been a couple years
yeah.
ago.
Sony's going to have a Wii-like controller. Nintendo's had it for a couple of years.
Right.
So the difference is there's no controller. You go like this. And I don't know if anybody really wants to do that, to be honest with you.
I mean, wow. Leo, that was pretty awesome. You look like Elaine Bennis.
That's Elaine dances. When you're playing in a game, you're going to look like Elaine dancing.
That's a Seinfeld reference.
Yes. Oh, man, you are old. Actually, our local Fox affiliate replayed the Seinfeld pilot last night, and I called my wife and said, look, it's Jerry Seinfeld in 1989. She wasn't interested. All right, so we're going to come back in just a little bit, and I'll find something about Microsoft to talk about with you guys. Maybe, I don't know, something in the corporate realm. What do you think about what you'd like to talk about, Ed? I like your I'm a PC shirt. I just noticed that. I have one. I'm wearing it. Mary Jo Foley's upside down. We still don't know why. Ed Bott is here. We're going to talk more in just a bit. But first, a word from Drobo, the great Drobo hard drive. I don't want to call it enclosure. It's really a data robot that will keep all your stuff safe. You'll never run out of room. And now you can save $25 to $500 using the code Windows at Drobo.com/Windows. You've certainly heard about Drobo by now. If not, let me tell you, this thing is great. The original Drobo, that's what I've got at home. 4 disk bays. I've loaded it up with 1 terabyte drives, but you know I could put 2 terabytes in that. That means 8 terabytes of data. Now, some of that's reserved for redundancy, about, I think, a quarter of it, which means around 6 terabytes of storage. And in fact, the light just went off on mine that said, oh, this drive is too small. It was a terabyte or a 500 gigabyte drive. Just pop it out, put a new one in, and I've got more storage. If one of the drives dies, no data loss at all. It'll say the little lights on the front come on. You replace that bad drive. It rebuilds itself. You're good. You're good to go. That's just, I mean, it's just fantastic. Great for home users who want to back up data or maybe have that iTunes library in a central location or movies or music. There's also the Drobo S that has 5 disk bays that not only gives you more storage, but also more speed for creative professionals, people who work with large data sets. The Drobo Pro for small businesses and creative teams, 8, count them, 8 disk bays, up to 16 terabytes of storage. And the new Drobo Elite, also with 8 disk bays, but dual gigabit Ethernet ports. So you can use iSCSI, connect up to 16 computers. It looks like a local drive to as many as 16 computers. It's a storage area network at a much lower cost than what we paid for our SAN, let me tell you. I know, because I'm crying. And the new Drobo FS, which is runs dual processors, dual versions of Linux, has lots of applications for it. Drobo's really... they're really kicking it. They're just doing such a great job. I want you to check it out. Go to Drobo.com/windows to take a look at the entire Drobo line. And take a look also at the great discount packages on populated Drobos. Drobos with their hard drives. Savings from $75 to $500 when you use the offer code Windows. Drobo. Drobo.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly and all of our Windows shows. Anything going on that we haven't covered yet, Mary Jo Foley, that you'd like to talk about? Oh, I potted you
about
down.
It, but I'm surprised you didn't talk about
what
it.
What was that?
The market cap thing.
Oh, I wasn't going to bring that up. I didn't want to rub salt in the wounds. You're upside down. I feel bad.
Actually, Microsoft passed again.
It went back?
It went back.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so I don't know how important market cap really is. It's just it's a number.
Not.
It's not. It doesn't mean how successful a company is, how big it is. It has nothing to do with anything. It's just how many shares of stock times their stock price. The number one company in the world, ExxonMobil. Number two and number three, neck and neck between Microsoft and Apple. And number four is Walmart. So, I mean, this gives you an idea. These are big companies. And Dell is somewhere down there, and I think that's really, from the point of view of Apple, that's really all they care about. It's like, because Michael Dell said they should sell off Apple for parts some years ago.
Yeah, and give the proceeds back to the shareholders.
Yeah, so. And I guess, well, Michael was wrong. I mean, let's face it. However, I don't know if it means a whole lot. Other than
what I found funny about it yesterday was the emails I was getting about it, which were like trying to do a cause and effect thing with Robbie Bach and Jay Allard leaving and Microsoft's market cap dropping below Apple. I'm like, no, I don't think so.
No. It has more to do with you being upside down than anything else.
It does.
Yeah.
It has everything to do with that.
It's just about as important. So market cap, it's meaningless. It's a number, it's bragging rights, but it doesn't change anything.
No.
It does show. I mean,
I think it says more. Well, I mean, puts a little punctuation on two longstanding narratives. Number one is Apple has been tremendously successful.
Yes.
You know, and they've continued to grow at the same pace that Microsoft grew in the late 80s and early 1990s when they were an unregulated monopoly. Since 10 years ago, when Microsoft was placed under court supervision and forbidden from leveraging their Windows monopoly into other areas, their growth has been basically flat. It's been a lost decade for anyone who owned Microsoft stock during that time. Whereas, you know, Apple's stock price is up, you know, roughly, you know, 550% in
a
5
lot.
Years or something.
Yeah, a lot.
You know,
it doesn't mean that Apple is as big a company as Microsoft. No, Microsoft still has dominant position in operating systems. They're a much bigger company. They have a much broader range of products.
They're in different businesses. In fact,
that's important. You kind of pointed that out earlier. Make that clear.
Those four companies that you mentioned there are in four completely different businesses. Apple is a hardware company that produces much of its own software to make the hardware work well. Microsoft is a software company that produces a limited amount of hardware that works well with its with its software. But there's an enterprise software company more than anything else, and to a lesser extent a consumer partner based company. And then you have a luxury consumer goods company would be how I would categorize Apple, and that's not an insult.
No,
that's,
it's a good place to be. A lot of margin there.
Tremendous margins, so that they're able to if you do the teardown on the products, they're roughly equivalent to some products from Sony and Dell and such, and yet they can command quite a premium for them, and they can also make a lot of money selling service contracts and services, and their whole iTunes store has been, you know, a tremendous moneymaker. So they're completely different business from Microsoft. I mean, it would be like saying, you know, it would be like comparing Exxon and Walmart.
Right. Right.
I mean, I think it's telling when anybody ever used to ask Steve Ballmer, who's the biggest competitor of Microsoft out there? His answer was IBM.
Yeah.
And I think if you ask them that now, they wouldn't want to say IBM because they're trying to position themselves more as a consumer company. But if you look at where they earn their money, they're more of an IBM competitor than they are an Apple competitor.
IBM's a consultancy right now, right? I mean, that's
so. Is Microsoft has a lot of consulting and works with partners, so similar kind of
interesting
dish there.
Yeah.
And we can use this as a segue to the other topic that I think that we might want to be talking about, which is Microsoft's cloud-based services for enterprises. business, their BPOS, their business productivity online services, and their hosted, hosted Exchange, hosted SharePoint and stuff. They have been very, very successful with those products.
And that is much more of an IBM style business, isn't it?
Exactly right. I mean, that's why IBM bought Lotus years ago was to get Lotus Notes and get the groupware and email thing.
And I guess that's why Microsoft hired Ray Ozzie.
Yep.
Does Ray lead this group? Is this what Ray's been up to? BPOS?
Well, it's one of the things that he's kind of been fostering behind the scenes is BPOS. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Exchange Online.
But I remember being I was on a plane coming back. Oh man, this is like three plus years ago, sitting next to a guy from Microsoft who didn't know who I was, but we were sort of talking about technology and we wound up talking about email, and he says, oh yeah, well, I'm working on this team. We're going to be doing some really interesting things with Exchange and SharePoint coming up, and they're going to be launching, in a couple months. Give me your card and I'll let you know when they're ready. And that turned out he was one of the key architects working on the original. This turned out to be, and it's become a huge business. And who they're competing with, their biggest competition right now is Google.
Yep.
With Google Gmail apps. Hosted apps, Google apps.
Google wants to be in this space, but I think if you compare the two, Google stuff looks so primitive compared to what Microsoft's doing in this space.
Yep. Well, and again, I think we can now go almost completely full circle. And if you come back to what enterprises, what businesses in general want, they absolutely need. The number one thing is we don't want to be put out of business by the government coming in and saying that we didn't comply with HIPAA or Sarbanes-Oxley standards. Right. So they have just requirements in terms of privacy, data integrity, data encryption and security that just overwhelm everything else. And Microsoft has more experience than just about anybody on the planet.
Does Google even do anything for that? I mean,
I would certainly imagine they have a good story to tell there, and I wouldn't want to give them short shrift based on
I have to tell you,
knowledge of their products.
If I'm trying to fulfill my SOX requirements, I'm going to go somewhere like Microsoft or IBM, I would think. Over a solution. Google just looks kind of down market compared to this.
I guess Google has had some enterprise wins. In there,
they sure have, in a lot of cities and
universities.
Interesting
but
wins.
When you ask them for enterprise customers, they seem to have like one or two that they always trot out.
Right.
So,
and I'm sure Microsoft has hundreds.
And I just saw a press release yesterday, in fact, for I think BPOS just got the University of Arizona to sign on with them for 18,000 seats. And in the press release that I saw from Microsoft, the stated reasons were precisely because of the privacy issues, which as a public university, they have no margin for error on those things.
Right.
And
doing
research on government grants, they just have no margin for error on that. So that they made the decision on that. And I've had and what's interesting is that Microsoft sells some of those things themselves, but they also sell them through partners. So at the moment, I'm evaluating hosted Exchange through a company called Intermedia, which is a very impressive product, hosted service that they have, reselling Microsoft's products.
Interesting.
And then my personal account is through yet another service that is where the back end is through Microsoft, but it's resold through a reseller. So you've got a lot of if you don't want to go if you're not big enough to go directly through Microsoft, you can go to one of their resellers and you still get the same platform and you still get the same thing there. And one of the things I really love about it is the idea of getting the not only the expense and hassle of management of these servers out of your organization.
You don't want to run an Exchange server.
You don't.
Yourself.
Well, you really don't unless you're a certain up until a few years ago you were a certain size. You sort of had to, but now the cost has gotten to the point where you can just completely outsource that, and it will run better than if you had it. And you can add user accounts, lower user accounts, and you don't have to worry about keeping track of things like client access licenses. And that stuff is just a major accounting headache for people who are supposed to be technical professionals. So that's it. So we're going to, I know Mary Jo and I are both going to be down at Tech Ed, and I think there's going a lot of that. I've actually been running it, my own little SharePoint server in-house here, and boy, is it an impressive upgrade.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we use Google Docs in a very ad hoc way here, but I have an account with DNA Mail, which is hosted Exchange and SharePoint. I really should probably pay more attention to it. But this is an example.
Well, wait until they upgrade to the 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, to the 2010 releases, because those aren't out there yet.
No, they're not.
Intermediate. You could talk to Intermedia, though. They'd be delighted.
They're doing it.
Tell them I sent you.
I will.
They're very, very good people, and they have Exchange 2010 running. So you can the Outlook web access now runs in any browser perfectly, and it mimics Outlook. It's really an impressive email client. Whereas Outlook web access with Exchange 2007 was very good, or good enough in Internet Explorer, terrible in any other browser.
Right.
You had these two different experiences. So they've completely fixed that. And then in terms of SharePoint, just they've actually taken this collaborative file storage environment and put the Office ribbon into a web page. And again, it works with Safari on a Mac. It works with Chrome. It works with Mozilla, Firefox, and by the way, with IE. They're browser neutral to a large extent. Don't require ActiveX. Don't require a bunch of funky stuff like that. And we've been using SharePoint as our primary collaboration mechanism for the last book that we've been writing on Office 2010, and it's just been a lifesaver. So easy to work with.
Well, now I'm going to have to give it. This is an example of something, and we've been talking with Mary Jo about doing an enterprise show. This is an example of something that if you're not in the enterprise space, you have never even heard of.
Well, and it's also one of the problems with all the people that we read online, all the bloggers and tech journalists.
We don't use this stuff.
No, we all sit in our, in our home offices or in an office that's part of a media company somewhere.
Right.
And our organizations, I think CBS Interactive is still on XP.
Really? That's depressing.
So that's what I hear. But they're part of CBS.
They're not going to make a big change wholesale. I understand. Yeah.
They're not going to make a big change wholesale. So even though people look at ZDNet and they say, wow, you guys must be using all the newest toys. Well, the individual bloggers are using whatever we want to in our offices because we're independent contractors. But the people who are working in the corporate offices have to deal with the corporate infrastructure. So it takes a while for this stuff to percolate out there. And it's also hard to find people who can write intelligently on this stuff and give real insights that are based on field experience. They're all busy. They're working for IBM or HP or HP, Microsoft.
Right,
if they've got the skills to do that,
they're not
sitting at home blogging. they're not making big consulting bucks.
Well, our new director of engineering here has just sent me a note saying, I've administered these before. We could do that if you want. So I don't know. But maybe this really begs for us to be doing more enterprise coverage. And I hope Mary Jo, we can get that show off the ground, because I think that's really something we ought to do.
Yeah. I know. It would be interesting. I think it could be good.
Mary Jo Foley covers... I love this shot, by the way. Mary Jo Foley has a unique perspective on the news. she is the editor of the All About Microsoft blog at ZDNet.com and also, of course, the author of Microsoft 2.0 from Wiley and Sons. You can find her at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Thank you so much for being here, Mary Jo. We love having you on the show. Really appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Ed Bott, who is right side up today, but just for today, is also an independent Windows expert and award-winning author and blogger at ZDNet.com. You can read Ed Bott's Microsoft report there and follow him at EdBott.com. Thank you, Ed. It's great to have you on once again.
It's been a pleasure, Leo, and happy anniversary, Paul. Wherever you are right now.
Paul in his bada bag are having a great time, I'm sure, in Lisbon right now as his steam comes out of his ears. What have you done to my show? He will be back next week. We'll have more Microsoft coverage. As always, on the Windows Weekly, we really appreciate you watching. We do the show live every Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, 1800 UTC, if you're in Lisbon, so that you can watch this at live.twit.tv, but it's also good to subscribe at twit.tv/WW. You can get it on all your portable devices. You can even watch live on many portable devices now, thanks to the folks at Ustream and MediaFly. Well, we are out of time, but thank you for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. I don't know anything about it, and I'll be honest, my eyes glaze over. I just can't, I can't follow it. It's just not, you know, it's not in my wheelhouse. Not even close.
I think we're gonna bring sexy back to Enterprise.
Well, if you do, you could put more power to you, I'll tell you.
And I won't even have to be upside down for that one.